morning, TG. Good morning, TG and the team. You're welcome to this meeting. Our apologies just for starting a little bit late. I think Honorable Witt, there's a confusion from our side. People think that this meeting was cancelled because of the Khutla TG. I think the impression was that we would get an apology from you that say you are attending the Khutla, but with that, until we get that apology, maybe let's assume that the meeting can, because now when I check with the colleagues, there are other questions that the meeting would not take place. Be that as it may, I would like to thank you, the DJ, for coming. Maybe after this meeting you need to rush as well. I'm sure we'll not have a long meeting. But that's to state welcome everybody. Understand that there's also the CEO of the, well, there's an association led by Chairperson Mr. Sokaiser. According to this report, it looks like everyone is looking around. Okay, is Mr. Msula that here? Okay. You don't want to sit very close to the higher education delegation. It would be nice if you could sit there. Yes, I would appreciate it. Well, what I wanted just to say up front is that we have received the apology from the minister. That's why we didn't know if this meeting was really going to take place. You know, we gave another impression that it will not take place. But I feel that it is me, we're here. And we have received the apology from the minister. But what I wanted to say up front is that this meeting was not a call because of what is happening at the universities now around the issue of the access. I'm sure DG, the department, would remember that this meeting was meant to have taken place last year, actually, during the medium-term budget policy statement, NTVPS. So, because that meeting didn't take place then, we reconvening that meeting. It has really nothing to do. It's coincidental that it is taking place at the time when the students are also up in arms as a result of what they refer as lack of access to education. We thought that it's important to clarify that because the people who would call a meeting as a result of what is currently taking place now at those universities would be the portfolio committee of education. Our meeting, it has more to do with issues of finance and funding. So, my apologies. So, having said that, honourable members, maybe it's just important to start without any waste of time now, to say why did we have to convene this meeting? Well, as I indicated that we have indicated that the meeting was meant to have taken place at that time. The reason for the meeting to be called at the time is that the intention, one of the intentions of the medium-term policy statement is to give indications of how funding is going to take place the following year. So that if there are any discussions should take place at that time, whatever negotiations issues that take place would take place in the context of the preparation of the budget during that time. That's why we call this meeting. Again, obviously, we thought that it was important to continue with that meeting so that we should be able to have an understanding and find a way forward together. Really, mainly two issues that concerned the committee. The first issue that concerned the committee is issue of funding of universities in general. As a committee, when you look at the structure of funding, we find that your established, for the lack of a better word, universities receive more funding, and the your other universities, smaller universities, receive less funding. Now, our view was that we do not understand the reason for that as a committee, as we are of the view that this type of honorable sir, you're joining a hand that side, no, he's sitting on this side. Okay. Our understanding is that maybe the so-called established universities have got resources, they've got ways of fundraising and so forth. And the smaller universities perhaps do not have the same access to funding other than what government is providing. I mean, I'm saying it's a naive, what you call it, understanding from this committee. But also linked to that, is generally the issue of the funding for students. For their, what you call now, education. So, to us, we were saying the view of the committee is that the committee does understand it is that there will never be enough funding for any of the government or responsibilities. However, the issue that the committee would want to raise, would want to view, is the perhaps what is being done to ensure that there is not sufficient fund, but just to increase the funding. And secondly, we are aware that, especially for 2014, that the good results, metric results for 2013 would obviously have a negative impact for financing of students. So that is really the main or the thrust of the reason why we hold for this meeting. And therefore, also to say, other than the nexus, which is provided by government, we are aware that there's a lot of resources that are available at school in terms of bursaries. Is there a way, perhaps, of consolidating or of coordinating those what you call the resources, such that if consolidated, they could have a better what you call it impact in terms of ensuring that they reach as many what you call students as possible. Many students, I mean some students at university, they might have more than one what you call a builder. Others have nothing. Now, but it's not just the case at the level of universities. It is the case generally around our social responsibility in general in the country. There are billions of money that are there that cater for social responsibility. But the impact is not felt because of the way these resources are structured. So, PG, I think that yes, that is what is the case. By the way, the other issue at the time that I forgot was that you had just you were in preparation for opening of the two universities. So I think that then the case was how do we ensure that the cake is spread such that it reaches as many students or beneficiaries as possible. Well, on that note, DJ, I would like to invite you and welcome my new colleagues who have come in and apologize to them that I have apologized on your behalf that last week we were not sure if this meeting would take place or not. So our apologies for that. Okay. Over to you, DJ.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and also welcome the opportunity for us to present the funding framework and review of the Department of Higher Education and Training. I was also hoping that, convening this meeting at this time would also pronounce perhaps on some additional funding we are contemplating to the department. Yeah. So the funding framework which is currently implemented by the Department of Higher Education and Training is the one that was approved in 2003. But since a comprehensive review that was undertaken through the process led by the task team, of which recommendations have been made available to the department. Now we're in the process of modeling that, taking into consideration various components that really matter in terms of program offerings in our institutions, and what are the requisite facilities that would be required thereof. You would remember, Chair, we have undertaken a study on the question of articulation, and we thought it becomes quite important that we factor this aspect within the funding framework, so that we ensure as we deepen the processes of offering training and education to our youth, we do not lead them into dead-end programs or qualifications. The department gets its funding from the national fiscals, and ours in the main really is just to pass it to institutions and entities. But we are mindful of the fact that there are other various pockets from which universities do get funding in the forms of bursaries, donations, and other sources of funding. For instance, there are bursaries that would be generated from other government departments, provincial governments, municipalities, and other sources. We are currently looking at this as to whether we can't be able to consolidate this so that we could be able to make the meaningful impact, in the system. I'm with a team from the DET which would assist in taking us through the CFO. I don't know whether we would be introducing ourselves individually. Perhaps when they are presenting, they would be afforded that opportunity. As well as Brenda, who is in charge of financial planning and institutional support to the universities in the main. And there's a component of NESFAS as well, which has grown quite tremendously. In 2010, we were allocating around 3.1 billion. But this year, it's around 9 billion. It's a huge jump. In terms of the allocation of funds and in terms of growth, I think is the single biggest item, budget item, that has received such an increase from government across. Well, of course, there is a lot of more that needs to be put, on in addition to that, but I think it would really be able to benefit quite a number of students. Because currently students who stand to benefit are around 480,000. It's quite a big figure. So I'll ask my colleagues to take us through so that we could be able to get into closely to various forms of funding and how then they find expression to individual institutions, either through block grants or earmarked grants, and as well as in the form of bursaries that are administered by National Students Financial Aid Scheme. So with those few opening remarks, I think we are ready to make our presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Brenda Swart. I'm the Director for Financial Planning in the University Education Branch. I'm going to take you through a presentation to give you a quick overview of how the funding works, and then I'll also point out specific areas where we actually invest a little bit more in our historically disadvantaged institutions. The current funding framework, which is being used at the moment, was approved in 2003. It is a performance-based funding framework, so it funds a lot of research output and teaching output, although I'll explain to you the bulk of the money that goes to universities is on the input side. And on the input side, the majority of the funding goes toward, it's allocated through a block grant, which is used at the discretion of council for funding a teaching and learning activities. And for 2013-14, this block grant amount amounted to 18.3 billion rand. EMOC funds allocated for specific purposes, and these include, amongst others, the infrastructure grant and the SPAS grant, and I'll show in the next slide. Then the bulk of the amount is for NSFAS, which is 3.6 billion. The Minister did appoint a committee to undertake a funding review. The report is with the Medicine Department. It will be released later during this month. A technical team and a reference group have been appointed to model more detailed, more further recommendations made by the committee, and then also work on a draft revised funding framework. But that will be a process over the next few months. Then the components of the funding framework, you'll see that it's mostly, as I explained, the block grant. And the block grant is further divided into teaching input, teaching output, research output, and institutional factors, and I'll explain a little bit. Then there's a list of the earmark grants. I'm not going to read through each of them, but is there any specific questions? I'm going to give them, but if there's specific questions about any of them, please feel free to ask. The next slide gives you an overview of the funding that has gone to universities between 2011-12 to 2014-15, which will be next year, and it's also divided into the block grants and the earmark grants. The largest increase was in 2011-12 due to the increase in NSFAS, which was almost 70%. Increase in 2011-12. On the teaching input side, the next table will indicate on the teaching input unit side, we do not fund headcount enrollments, although we have a very thorough process of enrollment planning, and it takes place over a period of 3 months. It takes place over a period of a few months, but it's enrollment planning for a period of 3 years. The next enrollment planning cycle, which the department is busy finalizing at the moment for minister's approval, is 2014 to 2019. So the enrollment planning is carefully done in line with the available funds and how we fund a certain area of qualification and not specifically the headcount enrollments. Although we look at headcounts, it's not the headcount, the actual students that are funded. It's the qualifications that do, and we call that full-time equivalent FTEs. Now, these groups is the main funding groups, and it's also the SESM categories, your classification of education subject matter, which means that if a university is doing a qualification in education, or there are students that are mainly doing education, law, and psychology, they'll receive less funding. So it's category one. The weighting there is, the funding ratio there is one. So if a university has more students in the area of, say, architecture, which is category three, or category four life sciences, then the university gets more funding. So you'll see also, why the way the current funding framework works is if you have a university like Port Hare, that most of these students are undergraduate students in humanities, why in terms of the teaching input units they get less? Because this is also based on the cost of each of these categories. So it costs less to offer a qualification in law or education as opposed to a qualification in the area of physical sciences or life sciences. It's the actual cost that's really based on. It was also reviewed in terms of funding review. I think there are one or two changes that actually went back to the costs that were used, and it's really just one or two changes that are being proposed. The next slide shows you the teaching input unit shares. That is what I explained, that makes up the bulk of the block grant funding. That is your majority, your teaching input unit funding is, for 2014, it is 12 billion of the 18 billion the block grant. So that's on the teaching input side. What, just explain very quickly, if you look at the headings of each column, it is 2011, 12 and 2009, I just wanted to emphasize that is how our funding also works, is that because we work on audited figures, we are always 2 years behind, if I can see it very simply, that the actual enrollments and graduates in 2009 is then funded, they receive the funding in 2011, 12. So the actual, for 13 last year's enrollments, graduates are then funded, they receive the funding in 2015-16. Then we have the calculation of teaching output grant, which is the next one. Teaching output grant, that is your second highest funding category in the block grant. And it's determined by the number of graduates produced in a specific year. Each graduate is weighted to generate a teaching output unit. And then each graduate has a certain weight depending on the length of study and the qualification time. So it gives you an indication of what would the rand value. Say, for example, a student that for a certificate and diploma of 2 or less, the graduate value was 9,500 and the weight is 0.5. So those two are used to then determine the teaching output unit and grant that a university specifically receives. So if university does have less students in, more students in diplomas and certificates, they will receive less in terms of outputs. Teaching development grants, this is almost, if I can say, an add-on or a earmarked funding category where we help universities or they get financial support to improve their graduation rate. So a lot of the universities where there's a need to improve their teaching outputs, we have set aside our 575 million to help universities in these areas. We weigh the FTE unsuccessful students of the universities having low success rate and then larger proportions of unsuccessful FTE students with a maximum weighting of 1.5 to determine how much they get of that 575 million. All universities receive a teaching development grant. It will be that maybe in the case of the UCT or the Southern Bosch, they get a small amount, whereas you'll get on our HDI, universities will get larger amounts. But each university does have some need for teaching development. Research outputs? Yes.
I don't want to be left behind. That's on the point that you said.
Sure.
That teaching development fund comes from one that is funded by government.
Yes. Jefferson.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
And you'll see if on the third or fourth slide where it indicated all the numbers, it was the earmark grants that it comes from the funding from our department, teaching development grant. Then,
so, these are silent funds, you know, in the view of the public that are going into these institutions. And in that totality, they constitute about 80% of what is actually happening in terms of teaching and learning in each and every institution. And what is normally in the public eye is as far as possible, which is supporting tuition, which is really only about less than 20% of the total cost of what makes teaching and learning per student in an institution possible. And I think it's important to note this. And these are billions. It's not just the small amounts of money. They are billions. Yeah, but there is this concentration on what, you know,
is about bursaries, you know, loans, without considering the totality of government expenditure, which is so huge in the system.
Just as an example, Walter Sisulu University's teaching development grant is 35 million rand. So over and above the block grant that they receive an extra 35 million just to focus on teaching, improving teaching activities to improve their teaching outputs. With the teaching, with the EMR grants and specifically the teaching development grant, the department has developed specific criteria for universities to that they need to use to prepare plans on how they're going to use the money. The plans are approved by the department, are evaluated and analyzed, and they're approved by the department. And then universities need to go back and use that money specifically for projects. So it's closely monitored to see that universities invest their money in specific projects that will improve the teaching side of the university. The research output grants, this will be, yes, this is a grant that does benefit those universities that do more research, but there are a lot of our universities that also, even if the research component is a bit smaller, they do receive this funding. So the research output grant is then based on the, you'll see that there's, depending on the type of research, whether it's a publication unit, a research graduate, or a doctoral graduate, the weighting and an amount of values that they get in determining the output unit that they actually get funding for. The research development grant is a research development grant that's similar to the teaching development grant. If what institutions do not achieve the normative research output unit as determined by the department, the normative unit are calculated based on the total number of permanently appointed instruction research staff for a specific year and then multiplied by a predetermined ratio. So for 13-14, 176 million have been set aside for universities to actually work on improving their research outputs. I will just indicate the time I did for Walter Sisulu for the research development grant. Limpopo receives 51 million rand. I think of the 176 million. And that, as I said, is also, once again, it's also based on specific projects that is analysed and approved by the DG ministers for them to actually invest the money in to help improve their research outputs. Then the last category of funding, the block grant, is the institutional factor grant, and it's got two components, and this is also specifically where our HDI universities receive additional funding, and that's in institutional grant for disadvantaged students, operates by adding amount to the teach input grant depending on the proportion of black and colored contact students that are in South Africa or South African citizens. So this is an additional teach input unit based on the number of black and colored contact students. So if the universities proportion of students, FTE student enrollment is 80% and above, they get 10% additional teaching input units to help them as an HDI. And then the percentages decrease as the proportion of students decrease. Okay. Then the calculation of institutional factor grant, which is due to the size of the universities, the small universities. If they have FTE student enrollment, contact and distance that are 4,000 and less, they get 15% additional teaching input units. So that is also how it's on a grading scale, how they get more money or more teaching input units for the size of the university, smaller size of the university. Then the infrastructure grant, which is also an area where the minister has really focused a lot of money on our historically disadvantaged institutions. Our infrastructure grant is also an earmark grant, also for a period of 3 years. You'll see that the existing infrastructure grant was allocated over a period of 2012-13 to 2014-15. It is 6 billion over 3 years. For student housing, 1.4 billion has gone into historically disadvantaged institutions. If I can just maybe, there are 7 that we've identified, although the other universities do have components of campuses, like for example TH on the Shoshanguve and the Kharagpur campus we've also included here, and other universities that have a campus that was previously a study part of a history disadvantaged institution. So then we there's the student housing category, which received 1.4 billion of the 6 billion. The infrastructure backlog is 1.1 billion. So altogether, it's about just over 2.5 billion of the 6 billion goes into those historically disadvantaged institutions for specific projects. These are projects that have the different categories, specific projects have been approved on specific campuses, and these projects are now being undertaken over this period. We've also, if you look at the second part, where we've allocated in different categories, we have the cooperative projects category in the middle, it's about in the middle of that second block, where we've allocated 134 million. Now, these are cooperative projects where we encourage universities to partner with HDR universities. So, for example, UNISA is working very closely with Walter Sisulu and for Yale University on building a library which is a shared facility. And then we also have other universities that are partnering with the HDI universities to embark on certain projects. So sharing resources and helping those universities to have facilities that they can also use.
The intention in here, from yourself, is trying to improve collaboration amongst institutions. For instance, if you take KZN, how the University of KwaZulu-Natal can work collaboratively with a view of strengthening teaching and learning, research and development with the University of Zululand, so that we improve the quality of program offering in all institutions and take all of them to a prestige point through ensuring that we share and collaborate with institutions that are better resourced, that have got better human capacity, facilities, and in time, the historical disadvantaged institutions would actually overcome the hurdles that they are having. It includes also the exchange of lecturers, the development of program material, etc. It's collaboration. That's what we're trying to foster in the system, at the present moment.
So it is a very last point on this table, is that if you look at the category of project management capacity for 12 universities, 50 million is actually given that there is this large investment in infrastructure universities, we are helping, which are mostly our HDI universities, to increase and their project manager capacity by helping them to properly manage these infrastructure projects. The next slide just gives a few figures on the HDI and student housing focus in terms of infrastructure. Student housing received 1.3 billion in the first round of infrastructure. We talk about first, second and third round. First round started in 2007, so we've got three rounds of infrastructure. The one that I refer to is the third round of infrastructure. The first and second round, we invested 1.3 billion in student housing. The third round, 1.4 billion in HDIs and then 239 in the rest of the sector. The university's own contribution is about 700 million in total. From this money that we are investing in student housing, it will cover about 9,000 beds, which is very little in comparison to the actual backlog of 195,000 beds in 2010 and which will be increasing to 207,000 beds as of last year. I've already mentioned the backlog category was given them the money for a wide variety of projects such as new teaching facilities, stormwater, water storage and sewage facilities, which are some of the basic facilities that need to be improved at these universities that really impact on the teaching experience of students. And the next slide, foundation provision, very quickly, it's a lot of numbers, but it's basically emphasizing that there are about 15,000 students at the moment that we are funding in terms of foundation programs. It will increase drastically over the next few years as we increase money for our foundation provision. In the LMR grant, we've increased the foundation provision grant from 2011-12 176 million, and it's increasing next year to 236 million, and it will grow over the next few years, given the emphasis to increase the number of foundation students that need to be funded. That's also an earmark grant.
Just tell them what foundation grants are, you know, or just give me more details so that I understand.
Sorry, honourable member, if the foundation provision grant is for the foundation program, that first year before a student actually enters into a 3-year diploma or degree, it is part of that. It's structured programs that are part of a diploma or a degree, but it's an extra year that students actually go through to help them. Yes. I would just quickly like to share with you some of the findings or the analysis that was made with the funding review, just very quickly. In 2011, the state's budget for universities as a percentage of GDP was 0.75%, which is less than Africa as a whole, which is 0.78% compared to OECD countries of 1.21%, and the rest of the world 0.84%. So it's clear for Africa in terms of... Yes, you're right. Although South Africa spends a considerable amount on education, its expenditure on higher education is much lower than desirable. Education expenditure as a percentage of education expenditure in Africa is 20%, OECD countries 23%, the rest of the world 19.8% in 2006 specifically. In 2011, the estimated higher education expenditure, the percentage of education was approximately 12%. South Africa in 2011 spent the same percentage on higher education as the world did in 2006.
I do say it's quite important to emphasize this point, because what has happened over time, the spending in education as a percentage of the GDP has actually declined in the country. And it's a norm if we're not able to address and arrest quite quickly, can actually cause some deficiencies in terms of funding in the system, you know, over time. That's why we are elevating this point, so that but we're engaging, you know, with the Treasury on it. But it's important for this committee to acknowledge that fact. Because in education, you have to invest a lot of money to get quality of the kind of graduates, as well as to be innovative, produce knowledge through research and other related matter. So it's something that we need to address as a country. It's not a crisis yet, but I think it's important to acknowledge that and put measures to correct it going forward.
In 2011, South Africa spent the same percentage on higher education as the world did in 2006 already. The state budget for universities would have been 37 billion, so 37,000 million, so 37 billion, which is 15 billion more than the amount that was actually set aside. Which was being 21 billion in the funding of the department. pardon, chairperson?
Yes,
sorry.
37,000 million.
The next point emphasizes what the director had just raised. In real terms, government funding per FTE enrolled students fell by 1.1% annually between 2000 and 2010, while student tuition fees per FTE increased by 2.5% per year. Based on the differential increase in fee income and government grant, it can be concluded that the amount of government funding is not sufficient to meet the needs of the public university system. And I'm just sharing with you one of the recommendations, although the report will be released soon. One of the recommendations is that from the review committee is that government should increase the funding for higher education. We are also sharing a few of the recommendations specifically from funding review. I initially indicated that we did a small technical team and a reference group consisting of members from the sector and from the department that will now look at doing more detailed modeling of all these recommendations and then looking at the revised funding framework. But some of the recommendations that relate specifically to our HDI universities and other recommendations we're also sharing with you. It does recommend that the financial dispensation of HDIs has to be improved, considering introducing an institutional factor for HDIs. 2% of the block grant allocation will lead to a 10% increase in their block grants. I will talk to that just now on a different slide. The recommendation is to continue to prioritize HDIs and incorporate campuses of former HDIs in infrastructure development grants until backlogs have been eradicated. So we've started with that already. It's recommended that you have support units for HDIs that needs to be established. Particular attention needs to be paid to institutional accountability regarding resources allocated. That's very important. That's how we're also doing through the earmark grant, is that we are ensuring that projects are money is well spent and that universities actually account for the money that's being spent. An inter-ministerial forum should be established for addressing inadequate municipal services, which a lot of our universities, as you may have heard, have experienced over the last few months, for example, Rhodes University. Manage their student involvement prudently to avoid unnecessary strain on their facilities and resources. So that we are trying to... Sorry. Apologies, Chairperson. No. I'm just trying to make it. Let me just go back to that point. The recommendation by the review committee is that there should be an inter-ministerial forum that should be established for addressing inadequate municipal services. And then I'll just use an example. Although Rhodes is not the HDI, but is most of the students do come from rural areas, and then what happened is over the past few months, the student residences and the university have had problems with the water from the municipality, so much so that it was managed by the department with the help of the Residential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee and the university and the municipality, but for some time, for a few weeks, students were without water in Grahamstown. And then also what we, just another example is University of Venda, where we are investing a lot of money in the water and other facilities, is that University of Venda only receives water up to 12 o'clock during the day, and there's many days that the water facilities are closed for a few hours. I mentioned the next
one.
If you can go to the next slide.
Hi, Chair, can I just ask you, when you're talking about these universities, do you do FET colleges or not at all? So that's separate altogether.
Yes, I just visit the universities. It also recommended that there is a monitoring and evaluation capacity of the DHET is improved. to look at the efficient and effectiveness of the funding framework and its functioning, as well as the financial health of universities that need to be improved. A temporary unit similar to the merger unit should be created to develop and monitor strategies, as well as to provide assistance in the development of underdeveloped universities in the system. That is also once, so these two recommendations are more closely focused to the funding that universities get, how should the framework, should there be changes in the funding framework, how that's more closely monitored and the implications of the impact on universities. Current formula-based approach consisting of block grant and EMA grant should be retained. Although we anticipate there will be changes in the funding framework, there was a lot of support for keeping the existing structure of having block grants and EMA grants. Current principles, goals and overall architecture of the funding framework should be retained with adjustments to some of the components of the funding framework. I think I'm going to skip the next slide. It's also very similar to, you know, the monitoring and solving of the funding. And I'll go over to the next slide. Recommendations. Just a last recommendation, if you flip it there, is teaching input units and not headcount should be used as a base for determination of deviations from the approved enrollment plans, since headcount could be misleading. So do currently the funding fund is based on units and not headcounts. The ministerial statement on funding, this is a point I just wanted to emphasize also to the members, is that the one recommendation that has been made that a percentage needs to be top-sized for disadvantaged institutions, the minister did decided in the last ministerial statement to already set aside money for this recommendation. In 2015-16, 410 million had been set aside for the new factor that was linked to disadvantage. The distribution of this fund must first be modelled and approved before details are provided. So that will now be part of the work of the committee over the next few months. So that is the whole section on the funding of universities, and then if you wanted to go over to the section that members raised or about NISFAS, the monitoring by the department specifically, if I can just share a few slides on that. NISFAS Act provides that NISFAS allocates funds for loans and bursaries to eligible students. NISFAS develops criteria and conditions for the granting of loans and bursaries to eligible students in consultation with the minister. Yes, Chairperson. The NISFAS board consists of 13 members appointed by the Minister, of whom one member must be employed by the department and one member nominated by the Minister of Finance. The NISFAS board has four committees, EXCA, Finance, Human Resource, and Audit and Risk Committee, to advise the NISFAS board, of whom the department is represented on three committees with an exception of the HR committee. NISFAS reports to the Minister and the department through quarterly and annual reporting as required by the PFMA. Allocations to universities are approved by the NISFAS board and submitted to the department for concurrence. The NISFAS internal audit unit currently outsourced to Deloitte conducts annual university internal audits to provide management and the audit risk committee with assurance and insight into the effectiveness and efficiency of internal control in place to manage the university's NISFAS financial processes. In addition, it provides the NISFAS department with quality information in NISFAS funding administration formed by the financial aid offices at universities operating according to the NISFAS guidelines. Then in 2012-13, an audit plan. 18 universities were audited in 2012-13. The following areas of scope were audited specifically: processing of financial aid applications, successful and those that have been declined, conducting student need assessments, including the eligibility criteria, allocation of approved loans to student accounts, processing and payout of student allowances, compliance with the N+2 rule, duplicate funding, annual thresholds, the claims process, and also the disability funding that also goes to students. Thank you, Chairperson. That's all.
Your last statement that the following areas and scope were audited. That's lacking the spy. Maybe Nelson will fill up. Okay, let's take that as part of the transition to Nelson, because we're not having a lot of time.
Well, members, if you agree, can we take those presentations, take both of the presentations? That agree?
Okay.
Not a problem. You're welcome.
Sure.
I apologize on behalf of everyone. You see, if you are in Gauteng, people would not be sure whether to stay Dhaka or Dhaka. But we are in the south of the country, southern part of the country, so should I say Dhaka? Okay. Alright. Okay.
We'll just vote in line with the questions that were presented on the disbursements between misses and challenges related to disbursements, and touch briefly on some of the internal monitoring mechanisms to ensure that the expenditure that goes to the universities is accounted for properly. But on the this one, the scheme is now in 2014 expecting to disburse about 9.5 billion. It's important to note that also on the question of consolidation, Chairperson, that the scheme does not only disburse money that comes via the Department of Higher Education and Training. It disburses funding that comes from various other government departments, basic education, the Funzarushaka Bursary Scheme, social development, the social work bursaries, agriculture, military veterans, and a few other small bursaries that are from other government departments, including the National Skills Fund, the State Education and Training Authorities. Then my numbers might not necessarily tie up with the department's numbers, because they include other departments in disbursement. In 2014, therefore, we'll be disbursing about 9.5 billion rands, and the criteria for eligibility is that students must demonstrate financial need and their academic ability to succeed at university. There's a substantial growth in funding in the last 5 years, from about 3.2 billion to the current budget for 2014 of 9.5 billion. We still think that there is a bigger demand than the amount of money that is available in the scheme. Just to show the allocations for 2014 to the various universities, the total amount is just over 6 billion rand, and as I've indicated, it not only includes the amount of money that comes from the higher education and training department, it includes various other departments or bursaries that are administered by the National Federal Financial Aid Scheme. The number of students that is expected to be funded, the estimated number is about 188. I think it will be a slight more, because unit numbers should be revised up because of the cost per student at unit that is much lower. Just on the challenges in terms of displacement, one of the core challenge, and I'm probably not addressing the current problems in the city, but the core challenge is we cannot fund every student that applies funding. That's probably the biggest problem that we have as a scheme. And secondly, the students that carry debt and they are prevented from registration because they carry debt from the previous year. And this comes as a result of probably a few things. One of them is outstanding fees that have not been paid by students. And what we have noted is in terms of the next semester, students get assessed and their family, for instance, the ministers would say your family should contribute 8,000 towards the education. But the students will continue throughout the year without contributing that 8,000. That means they will come into the following year of the academic year still owing that 8,000, even if the source has paid his portion of the fee. But the family did not pay his portion of the contribution, which the minister said your family can afford to pay something towards your own education. And therefore that student will not be able to register because they owe that part which was the expected family contribution. The second one is there's been an overclaim by universities. Universities in some instances have signed up students more than the allocation that they have received from NEPAS. And this therefore means that those students that have been signed up in excess of the available allocation from NEPAS, those students cannot be funded because there is no money for those claims from NEPAS. Thanks, sir. The second issue is therefore students will believe that they have funding because they have signed the loan agreement form and they will only discover maybe towards the end of the year or in fact in most cases they will discover it in January and they come back to the university and they find that their fees have not been paid. Just in 2013 to demonstrate the extent of the problem, we had over claims amounting to about 370 million rand in 2013 alone. Unfunded program, that's the...
Sorry, sir. Slowly, Mr. Sir. The thing is, the student comes in January or February, apply. And then whether the application has been approved or not, students will only find out later in the year. I don't know if I heard you properly.
Let me state that case. What happens is, in terms of that schedule, each university will be given an amount of money from the department. That is, University A, you have got 400 million rands. Therefore, you can approve applications. You can take applications from students and approve up to 400 million rands. But what has happened in some instances, universities have approved applications up to 420 million rands. Therefore, there is a 20 million rand now that is not in any bank account, because it's just a loan agreement form that is not backed up by cash.
Yeah, and at times the cause, you know, of this is that quite a number of students, they are able to pay the system. You would have one with parents, both of them working, earning quite decently. But on application, you register grandmother or grandpa. I'm being raised by grandmother. You know, once it's outside, that student, by all means, got money, he could easily access the institution out of the resources from the family. There are various components you know of. That's correct. That's correct. The other one would have both parents working, let's say in Cape Town, earning quite decently, but would say, I'm from Kofimba. That's where I was born. That person has never set a foot in Kofimba. You know, at all. My grandmother is there, you know. That's the address. What in actual fact, he grew up in an urban area, and really things are not as bad as it is projected. So there is a lot of defrauding the system. That's another challenge that we are having. And it isn't really an appeal that we are making, because it disadvantages those who are really in need of this money as a result of that kind of practice.
Thank you. Thanks, Rebecca. The other challenge is the challenge of unfunded program. That's what is by it is a first degree fund or first diploma funder. But we're funding a lot of Bachelor of Technology students, BTEC students at the University of Technology, expecting to be funded because they're claiming that the BTEC is not necessarily a post-grad qualification, but NSFAS funds the National Diploma at the University of Technology, and we fund the bachelor's degree at the Trustland Universities. And one of the challenges that we have in the system is the expectation that we should be funding the BTEC program, and we simply don't have resources to be funding the BTEC program. And the other challenge that we have is the non-alignment between the academic and the financial year. Where we sit now in 2014, early February, we don't have money to pay for any student currently who is in 2014, because money will start flowing in April when the new financial year starts. And that's one of the challenges that we have in the system. Of course, there is an amount of money that NSFAS recovers from former students, which assists us to close this gap that we have. But it's not as much money as we would have loved to have in this time of year, because between January and March, we simply don't have money, because we should have finished last year's money, and the new year's money is only coming in April of the financial year. So it's a challenge of a misalignment of the 2 years, the academic year and the financial year. Just on the monitoring of these disbursements, and part of the challenge with the NSFAS model currently is the NSFAS program is taken to the student by the university employees who are employed in the various financial aid offices. They are not NSFAS employees. And when people say NSFAS is treating us badly, they are probably being treated badly at the financial aid office, but not necessarily NSFAS employees, but university employees. But they are called NSFAS employees because in some universities you find that NSFAS makes up more than 90% of the bursaries that are being dispersed in that university. But in the historical advantage, universities, students are able to differentiate between a NSFAS office and a financial aid bursary office. But in the historical disadvantage universities, NSFAS makes up a substantial number of bursaries in that office, and that office therefore becomes known as a NSFAS office, not necessarily as a financial aid office. But that office ordinarily should be addressing Transnet and ESCOM bursaries and any other bursary. It's not necessarily NSFAS officials that man the office. But also there are mechanisms to monitor that we have. We set up claim submission deadlines. We push investors to submit the loan agreement forms to us in time so that we can be able to pay on time. And we also to ensure that we spend all the money that we have a redistribution process that we do towards the end of the year, which is all the universities that have not used their full allocation. We take that money and take it to the universities that still have a need for that particular financial year. We're seeing that declining over the last few years, because almost every university has got enough students that need to be funded. There is no room for redistribution, but there is room for more money. All the universities say we need more instead of we can declare, and we can declare back into the system. Part of the intervention that we're putting in the system is to now ensure that the funding is linked to a student, not necessarily linked to a university, because the allocation formula, as much as it takes care of the number of students that each university registered, the disadvantaged students that are registered in a particular university, it is still based on a university. And the change model is to now ensure that NSFAS allocates funding to individual students, and it's the individual students that now decide where they are going to study. And that will deal with the issues of the allocation formula between universities, so the equitability of the allocation formula from one university to the next.
And the last slide is just demonstrating the new model, the new directorial model. We already started piloting this model with various universities this year, and we're hoping that if it works well, we'll be able to roll it out to more universities in the next year. The model specification, just briefly, is saying NetFast will now deal with the student directly. Students will now no longer apply to their individual university when they need financial aid. They will apply to NetFast. The only funds that will go to the universities are where the university is a service provider, for instance, tuition and accommodation. But allowances will go directly to the students to via vouchers that the student can redeem at merchants. For instance, if the student is staying in a self-catering accommodation, the student will be able to go to a Pick n Pay or to a ShopRite and buy groceries at Pick n Pay or ShopRite. If the student wants to get books, they will go to Franskite or any other bookshop, and they will go and get books at the bookshop. The university will get the tuition portion and the accommodation portion.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tartan. The DG had left colleagues here behind. Thank you very much for the presentation. Honored members, there you are. Now, so you wanted to make an intervention earlier. Now is the time.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I just wanted to check around the issue of the system. To say it's so easy to fraud the system. And if it is so easy to fraud the system, it simply means the plan to make sure that there's no fraudulent is not up to scratch. Where a person can say that I'm staying with my grandma, whereas that person. So it means maybe there's a need to tighten the ropes to make sure that the system does not get fraudulent. And I also picked up that they're talking about that the university staff is the one that is doing that, taking out forms for so that students can fill it in. But already it was corrected when he was saying that now the student will apply on their own. So already it's there. But there's in terms of recovering money from students who took the loan, is there any recovery plan? Because it's not so clear. That's why some of the students don't pay based on there's no one who's really following the math to make sure that if that's for an example, I'll make an example. If one student is working and you are not able to pick it up, how about partnering with all these hiring institutions to think, these are the names of the students, when they get hired, please inform us so that we can start to pay more money. Because sometimes you don't get your money back. It's a very slow process. So maybe if you can have a plan how you're going to recover your money so that they can be able to assist the others. And that's it for now.
Always you talking about the level of the recovery.
Not only the recovery, Chair, also the level of fraud. How can it's so easy to fraud the system? It simply means they need to tighten their ropes in terms of if I come and apply or my child go and apply as a student, what is there that makes sure that what he or she has written on that form is the truth? Any follow-up to make sure that things like that should not happen. As I'm saying, the system itself needs to be, they need to tighten to make sure that money goes to the right people. And also, I'm not sure what is written on form. To make it clear to the students to say, if we find out that you are frauding the system, you can be taken to jail. So that it should not even try to start. Those who start will be others. But those will be really, but there's nothing, I don't know,
I've never seen the forms. But there's nothing that is warning a student today, you do one, this is the consequences. It needs to be clear what is written on those forms, so that they should not do that. Because you find others, their parents paying, in the meantime they are also looking for loans on others. It does happen. So we need, our system needs to be in good, in such a way that if you want to fraud it, you think twice as a student. But if it's like this now, everybody can do what he or she wants to do. Thank you, Chapter. The presenter mentioned that they receive funds. Ms. Watt mentioned that, the total 3.9 comes from the department for NAF fund. So, and the presenter mentioned that the other amount comes from different parts of the department, so different sources. Can we have an idea of what those sources are and how much they contribute to NAFAS? And another thing that should be clarified is this number of the amount returned is this amount. How long have we given student A money? Is there any progress in student A, or has he been there knowing that I'll get amount from? How do you make sure that you don't give student A more than the required period at the university, because others will fail and fail and fail? How do you control that part of it? Because we know they are needy. But is there any progress? Do you get any progress report to say, now we've been supporting you for a long time? The little students come up, Mr. Veteran, allow the new one to come in. How do you control that part of funding these students? And do you use, I think it's hard to say blacklisting. What do you do with the students who you're sure don't pay? And maybe you know that this student stays in the same street with me in this townhouse, and I know it's one of the students who need to refund, but his place is unemployed. I think it links with what Honorable Mofolo has mentioned. And maybe if you can repeat the, again, maybe I wasn't concentrating when we're talking about the unfunded programs. I'll stop here and refer back to some of the issues that we discussed.
Thank you, Chair, to my relative who presented. Thank you very much. I really would like to agree with Honorable Mufulu and Honorable Mashego, because you know it's very disconcerting, the whole question of fraud and fraudulent claims by students, because just on a note, maybe what the department should do is talk to their colleagues in the Department of Basic Education up the level of pass rate for matrix, so that they can have less students and they will need less money. Because the standards are so low at the moment that people can't pass when they get to university. I'm sorry that we didn't get more information with regard to with the FET colleges. We have in NIFAS, for instance, we have 9.5 billion available for distribution to both universities and the FET colleges. But I would like to know what the what the allocation is at the FET colleges and how it's broken down for FET colleges. Because to me, FET colleges are very important, because they are the colleges that are turning up the skills for this country, and not bachelor's degrees that you can do very little in social psychology. Really it's something which is very important to us, and we don't know how those elite colleges are funded because we didn't cover that in the presentation today. I see that there was an audit of the NIFSA's funding, and I would like to know, you said they audited various things. What are the audit outcomes? You know, we don't know what the audit outcomes are and whether there was any adverse findings as far as that is concerned. The National Youth Development Agency also has funds for bursaries, and so maybe you should take that money over from them, and you have more money available for yourself. Chair, there's for development of there's been a lot said about the question of the various funds that are available for previously disadvantaged universities and colleges, etc., which is good. You know, we must spend in that area. There's nothing wrong with that. But what worries me is that there's one fund, the Teaching Development Grant, which seems to reward people that are performing poorly, the universities that are performing poorly, because they say, we want to help you to improve and do better, so we'll give you money to do better. You can't give money, you must increase the standard of the education. This fund just seems to me not right, that we are actually rewarding universities who are performing badly. We should be doing something more. Thank you, Jim.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the Department for the presentation. Now, just a few questions, just for clarity's sake. The slide doesn't have numbers, so there's a slide that talks about 18 universities that was audited, on number of key areas that were audited, and I don't know whether that's the same question that he's asking, Honorable Swartz. But I just want to find out on the 18 that we're speaking about, the findings of it. Is this 18, they have any relations with some universities that either were in the process of being under administration and or are already in administration? And if so, what is the findings of those? The second question says that when the DG was speaking earlier, he spoke about the decline of expenditure in the education. Now, I wasn't sure whether I was referring, the reference there was in terms of budget versus expenditure, or the allocated fund relation to the GDP. So if you can clarify that particular aspect, because I just want to get some distinctions around that. And of course, no, it is a question, sir, that they will respond at some point. Then share the other question is in relation to the HDIs. And then the slide, the presentation, there's been a lot of presentation around that. The question I asked the last year some time was this question about the kind of the merger of the universities, and that sort of measure in relation to addressing the problems of disadvantage and bringing the resources into those universities. Whether that, as we look at, yesterday there was another march here in Cape Town, there was another march in, I think, KZN, SASCO marching with the various demands. But when you look at the actual resources of the former disadvantaged universities to date, and you look at the university, the former Stellenbosch and other university, I must leave you in Stellenbosch University. Stellenbosch. And well, I know what why he's disturbing me. So I'll continue to point to this spot. So
So the Stellenbosch, the other universities, and I'm making an example here, the University of Cape Town, and look at the resource of their resource base compared to the comparatively speaking, and you see vast difference. It worries me in terms of how do we cross that bridge? How do we close that gap? And I hear the issue about performance versus budgets. But for me, something must be done, and I'm not sure whether, I'm asking this broader question to understand whether the intended approach of trying to bring the resources close to those that are disadvantaged, whether that is in fact working. It is not in terms of the NDP. What is it that we need to do to close that particular gap currently? So this has been said about that. I haven't really heard anything about that. The whole thing about injecting the particular cash to address that particular aspect. So the third one is in relation to the NSS. I mean, I see the presentation. The DG did promise that any presenter will then say this is who I am. So I'm not referring to the presenter by name now by saying because that was not done. But the point I want to make is the change of model. The change of model of funding model to a direct model, funding model. Is it going to work in your view, this particular change of model, or there is also another intended possible? I just don't know how the change or the changes informed by this particular research and this research, the research provides this particular. You know, yesterday, just to illustrate this point, I don't know the capacity of the NSFAS currently in terms of that management, but yesterday at about 3:15, in preparing for this meeting, I phoned the number, the whole office, the NSFAS office number, and I hold on to this call for 9 minutes, full 9 minutes, before anybody picks up that phone to answer me. That's what I was looking for. Now, I mean, yes, we want to change to go in this particular way, but do we have what it takes to be able to? Now, I was just making an example so that I can ask this question, but that shows me is that you may have this big challenge that you actually not knowing that is waiting for you by changing a model to another model that is probably not going to work. And with current problem that we have, the second question in relation to that, as far as is the later cry of non-compliance in relation to the student payment in terms of the loans. I think the DG also made an example about this, how the system is robbed or basically outpaced by students in terms of addresses. Does this not speak to the kind of in-year monitoring of compliance of a particular agreement that you enter into? Because if the model continues in perpetual for the only crisis hitting when the school opens of the default as a default, you can continuously go to see this the mobilization and the mobilization and the march was there is going to be a couple of students that's going to be able to. So I'm worried about that as what is the plan to address that particular aspect. Surely there should be some in-year monitoring that addresses that particular aspect so that you don't have the bottleneck that happens in January where people arrive and they're informed that, listen, you have not been defaulted and therefore this has stopped. So, now, the other question, Chair, the whole thing about leveling the playing field, I think the DCRS will deal with that particular aspect question. The last one for me, surely in terms of the slides and what we see, there is this issue about the shortage of funding. But I mean, from what it has to what it is, there's been enormous injection. And I think we should continue to support the additional injection. But the additional injection in terms of, I mean, you've seen the student has, the amount had, the continuous worrying question is value for money. The value for money aspect. You inject that particular cash, but the output in terms of it, does it go in line with the injection of the particular cash that you're putting into it? That is continuously the worrying aspect in terms of the... So if you say definitely there is a value for money, and we can see the value for money, then obviously we should be able to support the particular aspect in terms of the additional resource. But Chair, let me pause there for a moment and allow the other members to ask.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted, on the presentation, which one is that?
The first one. Funding grant for TIU, you are talking about, you say, when it funds, you're not, it's not based on headcount.
Now, I'm just trying to understand, what do you mean by that? Because TA is about paying for the students that are there, but now why is it not based on headcount? The second issue is about you normally pay 2 years behind. Now, I still need some clarity what you mean. Do you say if we allocate money now for 2014, it is the money for 2010 or 2012, just like that? That's what you mean. And why should it be so late? That's why I'm trying to understand the issue. See, why does it happen like that? Maybe that's where also there are some challenges around that issue. And in terms of the plan that you're having now to merge, sort of merge the previously disadvantaged and the haves and the have not universities, the plan that you have, does it bind? Or is that sort of plan to, it depends on whoever in charge in that university will support that? Or is it a must that it should happen, you know? And when I look at your shift environment in your thing, there was a time where there was termination of personnel. And there were I'm not so sure about the reasons for that. And then after that, it was not so clear what happened. You shifted the management department, in terms of shift environment in their report. So I just want to understand what really happened to that money, because they shifted the money at the time when they wanted to shift the money. If we can just understand that, and then your turnaround time. What I'm saying, in the shift environment, when you do shift, when you shift money from one, what do they do? When they shift money from one area to another, there was a time where there was personnel that was, they terminated some of the personnel. So I just wanted to find out what really happened there. Unless they forgot about their report, when they shift their money in their report. But that's not all I wanted to understand. Now, in terms of the, I did ask it, but I'm still a little bit concerned to say the turnaround time in terms of allocations of money, it happens after 2 years. It simply means those universities, especially those who can't fundraise, will never be able to stand on their feet because they have to wait for 2 years. And for me, it's a serious challenge. Because now, that's why we're having so much uprising sometimes, because the haves and the haves not, they'll never be really doing, but all us as...
So, excuse me, I want to follow up. Maybe your question, just as I was saying earlier, to say,
okay.
You have explained, let me explain it again.
All right, sure.
Let us say what it means.
Okay. No.
I'm sorry to present you.
solitaire. Okay. All right, no, it's fine, sir. I leave it.
I'm not going to be long before you intervene, and so let me just ask this question. Last year we started a discussion, I think it was basic education. That discussion we had, there was something to do with the AVG college. Now the higher education is here. Maybe we can put that question to them. The issue is that what are the funding streams that comes from the higher education to AVG colleges, and what are the streams that come from the basic education to the AVG courses? There was an issue last year about this particular aspect of the streams of the grant that goes from the basic as well as higher education, and where should the one be housed? Actually, there was that discussion, but we decided to step it. Maybe they're using the benefit of. So we now have the benefit of the DGP. So maybe that can be very fast.
Okay. I think it's an important question because we are in the fifth year. It has not yet been what you call a clarified. Maybe we should what you call assist. I'm not sure if we are going to be able to assist with that. But
did you have your hand up?
No. Sorry, dear. Thanks. The question may be answered. But it is just a question of clarity, and that's about the two new universities, one in Mpumalanga and the other one in the Northern Cape. What are the challenges, financial challenges that are at this moment? And what are the problems they experience? And are they fully in operation? That is now Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. The financial challenges there, and if they are fully in operation, and that's my question. Thank you, Jay.
Well, thank you very much. Just to augment what my colleagues have raised, going back to the question that Honorable Mkhalana raises about the fact that our objective, part of the objective of the government is really to address those apartheid, what you call it, disbursements that were there in the past, where between developed or recreated so-called developed universities and the underdeveloped ones. So now, it would look like if you're looking at the allocations from 2011, 2012, 2013, which are taking those data at around London, you find that we're really taking into account what was presented on the slides here. Because these universities, your former historical disadvantaged universities did not provide the courses that are here on the slide. Now, in order to ensure that we address our what you call objective, what is it that is being done? Does government has a role to say, look, for example, we can't continue the situation where these what you call courses are only available at another sort at Stellenbosch.
Yeah.
and UCT, but we really need to ensure that they are provided elsewhere. But also something that we really hear, that if I don't know how true is that, that if students pass at the Walter Sisulu University, and another one passes at UCT. That degree is really not what you call it. So I say the same degree. Standards, the issue that I'm trying to address is, are not the what you call it the same. But the other issue is the also just coming to issue of the funding of the students on nurses. I think this question was raised, but I'm not sure if it was raised in the way that maybe I want to open the question. Student A, Honourable Mashiach, I think you did raise this question. That student A gets a loan, for nurses, in this year. I think I saw a report elsewhere where about, out of the 100% universities that get loans, but I think about the majority of them don't really finish their degrees. Now, what it raises is that you give money as government to me as a student to study, and then you walk away from that. All you do next year, you fund me, and so forth. Is there a mechanism just to support the students academically, or monitoring the progress of the students until the student finishes the course? Is there a mechanism to do that? Or perhaps are we looking at something like that, so that you ensure that those students, because the understanding is that when you give bursaries or loans to students, you're looking at those students that you think that they are capable, they will be able to pass their courses, but the same students don't really do that. Is there a way then of supporting it so that throughout the year, I hope the question make a sense. I think the other thing that perhaps we appreciate is the intervention by the minister on this 1 billion rand from the from the skills of the qualified. But I don't know, honourable members, I think the last few years we have not been able to monitor that spending properly. But some time back I know that there was over 20 billion that was not spent around what you call the sitters. So, shouldn't be taking money from, the money is needed elsewhere. There is lying dormant, it's not being utilized. Shouldn't be knocking there and say what is happening. And perhaps, as DG made this question, kind of ambush you now, is the monitoring of the spending at with the sitters. You know, some are doing well, but many are not doing well. And that these resources are required elsewhere. So I think that maybe we should let's stop there and then allow for the responses.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just few responses. My colleagues will take quite a substantial number of them as well. Tightening up the utilization of UNESFAS. Now, at the department, we allocate money.
Just one last question before you come in. It is related to the question that says the student now gets this loan from NEFAS and is converted into a bursar. Can you explain that as well?
But can I start with it, Chair? No, what is happening is that the students who are NEFAS beneficiaries, who are doing a final year of their study. So if a student passes and qualifies to graduate in that academic year, so the entire amount, including the loan portion that was allocated or given to him or her, is converted into a bursary, more as incentive and the actually appreciating the work that one has actually done. Because in the system, what we are doing as the department in order to facilitate expansion is access and success. Because if there is no success in the system, you are blocking the entry of others. So therefore, you can't talk of access alone. It should be access and success. As you come in, you should progress, get out, and others are coming in. Over and above, there are also mechanisms and interventions to expand the existing infrastructure, including the establishment of the two new universities, insofar as the universities are concerned. Are they in financial problems? No, they are still brand new. They don't have financial distresses. Yeah. Now, in relation to the first question, we allocate money to NEFAS as an entity that administers NEFAS disbursement for the department. And NEFAS dispenses this money to institutions. So institutions, they administer it at institutional level through processing the applications of students. Now they get taken to NEFAS. So there is a process of verifying the authenticity of this application in terms of the information which is provided there. NEFAS is upping the game in relation to this question. I think now they are working quite collaboratively with the Home Affairs, amongst other things, to verify IDs, etc. But the criminal is a criminal in the head. We need to continue upping the game. Maybe the CEO will elaborate, you know, further on this. In FET colleges, we pick this thing up as well. And there are policies that we have introduced to try to ensure that government doesn't lose. Because what was happening, students would be awarded erroneously these bursaries. And some students would use the transport money just as a cash cow, as a grant. What they do, you come, you register, you go home, you come at the end of the month, collect transport money, you disappear. You come at the end of another month, they collect this money, they disappear. That's why we were to introduce the attendance policy for FET colleges. Because our emphasis is that we are not funding empty desks, we are funding students who are sitting behind the desk, who are in the environment of teaching and learning. And that's what we wanted to
to see. ACT colleges, from the department, their location to NEFAS for ACT colleges is around 2 p.m. So there are a few other things than in NEFAS, you know, collect from CETAS, which take them to 2.2 billion as an amount. Yes. What we are saying in relation to this question of funding, we are saying the funding to universities as a percentage of GDP is lower than the other African counterparts and also developed countries. As a percentage of GDP, it's lower. That's what we're talking about. And that's what we think we need to correct. The measure, the historical disadvantagedness of an institution is not synonymous to measure. A measure is a model of how an institution could be better governed and managed. Historical disadvantagedness is as a result of injustices of the past. So these are two things, two different things. Now, what we are doing in relation to the historical disadvantage question. The minister has established a ministerial committee to undertake the review of funding. The report has been made available. Now we're working on the model of the implementation of that report. We'll be finalizing that. But the department didn't wait, is not waiting for that finalization. It has to actually work out the new funding regime or various aspects of it. For instance, on infrastructure, we've put in to historical disadvantaged institutions around 1.6 billion rands for infrastructure. And also in other components of funding, we've actually increased the share of the historical disadvantaged institutions, taking into consideration quite a number of factors. Now, what I think then becomes important is for us to ensure that we get value for money that we're putting into the system, specifically the historical disadvantaged institutions, because it's a lot more now than ever before. On measures, some measures are working quite very well. The measure that had huge challenges is the Medunsa University of Limpopo. Hence then the minister, through recommendations out of the committee that was established to look at the viability of that measure. It's Medunsa and the University of Limpopo is being damaged now, with a view of establishing a new university of health sciences, of which Medunsa would be part of, as well as establishing the academic hospital that would be attached to the University of Limpopo. That is so far as this question of measure is concerned. Yes. We'll be building a new institution of which that part of Medunsa would be incorporated into it. We'll be building a new university. No, that facility of Medunsa will stay there. Instead, a University of Health Sciences will be built, which would also incorporate that portion of Medunsa. In the incoming year. No, there and elsewhere. Yeah, how it would expand, it's something that's what the feasibility study is looking at. No, it would be demerged completely. Yeah. In terms of the law, it has happened already. Yeah, we're implementing that. All right. Thank you very much. Yeah. No, the two universities. The programs that are offered at universities are accredited and quality assured by the Council for Higher Education. Now, any program which is offered at a university has been quality assured and accredited as a competent and suitable program to be offered. If those standards are not met, then CHE takes accreditation for the offering of those programs. So all programs that are offered in our universities are quality assured, irrespective of which university that program is offered.
But there's no difference between epidemiology
There is no scientific difference. It's only a matter of preference. You would prefer to be there instead of being there. Yes, you'll still be a qualified graduate, competent, like any other person who would have studied, you know, elsewhere. Now, the program that he had some distresses, of which we intervened, you know, as a department, in partnership with SAICA, is accounting through to a project we call Tutuga, and we have put quite a lot of money in these institutions to ensure that the offering of that program, accounting, is at an acceptable level by the professional council, which is South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. We did that at the University of Water. I think we put more than 87 million. University of Zululand, Walter Sisulu University, University of Limpopo, University of Venda. So we have those interventions. It's over and above what NEFAS is doing. And that money is coming from the National Skills Fund. Then to answer that question, that money is not lying. Yes. Perhaps it's important to answer that question right now. And also, the establishment of the 12 new FET college campuses, 2.5 billion is coming from to put in that infrastructure. And a number of other interventions in the established institutions. For instance, on the veterinarian science, we had to intervene to increase enrollment at the University of Pretoria. We put more than 50 million, as well as the Skills Center for Renewable and Solar Energy. We have established here at the CPUT, Cape Peninsula University of Technology, next door. It's a walking distance from me. It's a walking distance, yes. Which is attached to the Faculty of Engineering. We have invested more than 78 million. The list goes on in terms of the strategic utilization of this money. We have answered the two new universities and the final year program. There's a support to students. No, it's coming. They will answer. I'll leave other questions to my colleagues, and NEFAS will take, you know, their portion.
Thank you, Gigi. Thank you, Jefferson. You can. I'm going to attempt to answer a few questions. The team development grant awarding non-performance, yes. I think that's been the sort of the, if I can call it, the perception in the past, and basically one can think of it in that way. But universities need to realize that they're actually, if they're getting more money through getting outputs and being successful than getting money through the team development grant. So we've really, over the last few years, we've changed the formula slightly so that when we fund universities, the amount of unsuccessful students, the weighting that we give, we've kept. Because what has happened in the past is that the University of South Africa, UNISA, has always claimed the largest portion of teaching development grant to the detriment of other universities, because there are so many more students and the success rate is not good. But that has already improved over the past year or two, and because we are focusing specifically on specific projects to help teaching development, the situation is changing. The money to UNISA has decreased since the last 3 years because we've changed the formula slightly, and these universities we are working with them much closer in improving teaching and to help improve the teaching outputs. But the money that's going to UNISA has decreased a lot, increased for other universities.
May I just react to that, please? The converse, and also true, that's why then you're rewarding poor performance, because, if I'm the rector of the university, I'll say, hey, gentlemen, we need money. Let's put some more guys to it. Let's give them degrees. Let's get the markets down and get more degrees, and then we'll get more money. That's what can happen. And that's why I'm saying, it's a dangerous grant, that we're awarding people for actually improving the graduation, that they should be doing at the right level, at the correct level.
It's a graduation rate in the context of systems and processes of quality assuring, not just the programs, but the offerings of those programs. Because what CHE does, it also looks at the caliber of lecturers who would actually be lecturing the program. So there is the entire package that would certainly assure quality in the offering of the program that they undertake. So the institutions are not quality assuring themselves. They are quality assured by an independent quality assurer.
Both you and I were at university. I disagree with you very strongly because, if you have the right guy, you can get your marks.
Well, that one, I don't think it belongs.
No, I think that what we ask for from the department is the fact. And we should separate that from perceptions,
On this point, I just want to add something also, is that the teaching development grant and the research development grant are really interlinked, because both the grants also work towards improving the quality and the qualification of the lecturers also, and also producing students as future academics, more on the research development grant side. Because a bigger part of the research development grant also, you've got three categories of universities, and each of the categories has different purposes for which the grant is used. Now, one of the purposes, one of the categories is where a lot of the money can go into lecturers or postgraduate students that can also become that will also be becoming your future academics. So the review suggests that these two grants be consolidated, so that one really looks the, because both of them are geared towards developing our institutions. Okay. The question on teaching input units, not headcounts, the FTEs, full-time equivalents, is about 0.75% of a student headcount, because it's based on the actual qualification that you enroll for, the time and the cost involved in specific qualification. So a student that takes, let's say for example, something in health science and something in humanities, the weighting is different because of the amount of time that's needed to spend on the delivery of this program. So that's what we call FTE. We fund FTEs. We fund teaching input units that are calculated using FTEs, full-time equivalents, and not the actual headcount or the body. So we a student is one headcount. We actually fund an average 0.75% of students because it's linked to the work or the qualification they enroll for. Okay.
Thank you, Jefferson, members. Just on the FET funding, there's basically, I think, one principle important to note that in terms of the legal framework, the FET function is now with the department. So it's not with basic education anymore. However, the full function shift process of placing all the FET colleges under us and putting all the funding in our budget is still in process. We anticipate with National Treasury that from 1 April 2015, so from the 2015-16 financial year, the function shift should be completed and all the funding should be allocated with the Department of Higher Education. So currently at the moment, there are mainly two sources of funding. One is the conditional grant, the FET College's conditional grant, which is a grant that's allocated on our budget, which is owed to the provinces for them then to spend on FET colleges, specifically for compensation of employees and operational costs for the FET functions that go with the provinces. The second portion of funding is the subsidies to FET colleges, and that is on our vote, and we are from this financial year responsible to directly pay to the FET colleges these subsidies. So the formula subsidy payable to FET colleges is funded by us, and it's currently paid by us to each and every FET college. So I think that should clarify the situation around the funding of FETs. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, Chair, for clarity, you're saying a portion of it goes to provinces. Is it going to be taken away from provinces and then to your department?
Thanks, Chair. So, Chair, just to clarify, to get a clarity, those two sources, there's nothing from basic education, or the only one that comes is through the provincials, that's still coming through the provinces up until 2015.
But provinces are part of basic in that context. Thank you.
I think now continue, we'll summarize, we'll come with something. Thanks, Chair. Just to deal with the questions that are related to the network, and I think I should link the question around the teaching the system and centralizing the system, because the two are related, well, the other is a response to the other. Part of this, the decision on centralization, it came through from the Ministerial Review Report in 2010 that recommended a part of the interventions that should be made, the system must be centralized so that we can be able to put controls. Remember, currently we have 75 different systems. So each FET college, out of the 50 FET colleges, has its own system. Each university has its own system. Therefore, to put in controls out of the 75 different systems was almost an impossibility. Therefore, with the centralization, we're now able to go to Home Affairs and verify some of the data. And the reason why I see it is not necessarily that
there is no verification system, but it's just an inherent risk in the system, because students would come with an affidavit that has been signed properly at the police station or other. But what does it mean? You know, that my grandfather is dead. It might mean that the grandfather just walked past the police station. That's them, the same affidavit. That's basically what was happening in the system. But then now we're able to now link up with Home Affairs and verify data. Home Affairs is also improving its own system, which helps us, because they are now linking the younger generation, which is the children. They are linked with their parents when they are born, which means we know that if the sorority is applying, these are the parents of so-and-so. And if these are the parents of so-and-so, we also like it because we've got a link to SARS through Sexual Surveillance of the Death Administration Act. That SARS can give us data that tells the so-and-so and so-and-so is working. And that we also use for collection to link up and know that so-and-so is working. Therefore, so-and-so, we should be phoning so-and-so to ask if they can pay. That's the advantages of the centralization of the system. Is it's helping us to deal with the issues of misrepresentation and fraud in the system. For the collection, just on the question of SARS, we've got access to the SARS information, very limited information that tells us so-and-so works for so-and-so, and this is the contact number and address of so-and-so. And that helps us then to pick up the collection stage and say, okay, SARS has told us that Mr. so-and-so is indeed working, and therefore we pick up that call and start tracing it from there. We also have the linkages with the government payroll system, PESAL, which they share information with us on who is working, what's funded by NESWAS, and then we cut the phone, and then we arrange for payment. The advantage of having PESAL is the single biggest payroll in the country, and that probably is a tag of the people that were funded are in the PESAL system. Then we do not have to deal with the other tag. Even the other tag, we've got information from SARS. That's the integration of the system, fraud and collection. I'm just answering those three questions together because they are in a way linked. On the funding sources that NESWAS administers besides DHT, we administer funding from the Skills Fund, the National Skills Fund, my colleague here on the left, the Fund of Basic Education, there's about 900 million rand. Yes. I'm sorry to bust the cover. We also administer bursaries for social development, that's about 200 million per year, agriculture, the various sectors about 200 million, military veterans, the TRC band, Eastern Cape province. There are various state institutions that we take money from and administer their bursaries. Whenever you see a child of a military veteran having a bursary, it's likely to come out of NESWAS pocket. The next question is the students in the system, how to ensure that we don't fund students for life. And the minister made this point this week that we're not going to funding professional students. And another system is we allow students in the system to stay for what you call the N plus 2 rule, which means the student is doing a 4-year degree. We allow them to stay in the system for 4 years plus a grace period of 2 years. Then they can't stay there in that system forever. Of course, we'd love them to finish in 4 years and leave, because as the DG has mentioned, that means that seat is now vacant. And the most expensive part of this system is not NESWAS, as DG has indicated. The most expensive part is what Renda puts into the system, because this one is the smaller portion of the money. If that student leaves the system, it means that seat is available for the next year. Hence, also there is incentive for students to succeed in the system, even before they get to finally 40% of their bursaries, of the loans, can be converted to a bursary industry and passes all their courses when they're continuing through the system. Because that is a much cheaper for the two kingdoms, 40%, than for them to occupy that seat for longer than desired. On the question of the NYDA, I think we have not yet linked up with NYDA on taking their bursary administration. We and I have noted that the the chairperson of the NYTA also sits in our board. I'm going to put the suggestion to him. That's on the question of the audit of the investment. These are internal audits, and some of the internal auditors they point to some improvement in the system. But in some instances, because we're already taking over from the Israeli administration, not only the investment fund, because we're already taking it over, and say, okay, let's prioritize these institutions for taking over, because these institutions are not doing it any better. That's part of the process that's going through the centralization, because we're trying to decentralize the system, and we'll, when we take over, the institutions might take over those that we think are not doing that good in terms of administration, and ensure that we enable their systems quicker than the rest.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've answered all the questions that related to Network VG.
His first question was yesterday he made wanted to test the functionality of the of NEFAS. He had to wait 9 minutes. I thought that he would comment on that.
I was waiting to hear the in-ear monitoring of the particular non-payment that was left. But the question of 9 minutes, I see that it was decisive, but the point has been made.
I think it's a matter that has to be followed up by NSFAS, because it would really terribly disadvantage, you know, students and discourage them for using the facility. I think it would be important for that to be investigated properly. And the people working on it have to account. All right.
This outsourcing, is it cost effective? Well, you mentioned that the NSFAS outsources is internal audit. Is it cost effective, or is it best to use the best way than outsource, and after outsourcing you
in terms of the internal audit function, and I know this is something that we have a lot of difficulty with especially some committees in Parliament, like Portfolio Committee, always question this matter. I think in the case of NSFAS specifically, it is definitely more cost effective. Because for NSFAS to create an internal audit unit that can perform the internal audits of all the institutions, basically, on a sample basis, on a regular basis, do all the strips, form all that work, it's almost hardly impossible. You need a building just for internal audit. So by outsourcing it, on the one hand, apart from the fact that you apply the expertise and you get those people independently to report to you, which is a very big benefit in itself, that it's an independent unit that does it, but then secondly, they can use their resources in other provinces and across the country, where they can just tell somebody, please go and do this little bit of internal audit for me in that specific university. They don't have to send resources from Cape Town to Limpopo or wherever. And that in itself is highly cost effective. So yes, indeed, it is much more cost effective than to create a fully fledged internal audit unit within the NSFAS.
I think that part of the question is not just cost effective, the value for money in that. And that is a part of the question. But are we covered, honorable members?
So we covered, but there's one question I ask. I thought the DG would speak to it. It's got to do with the presentation. That's the end of the slides. There were 18 universities that you spoke about that have been investigated on. And I asked the question linked to some universities that are either under administration as a result of the findings maybe out of those universities. So that question was not answered, that the linkages between those universities and investigation.
Actually, Mr. Dacha should answer this better. The internal audits at those 18 institutions were conducted by NISFAS. So it's the NISFAS internal audit outsource function who did those. And that in itself were not reasons for any institution being placed under administration. Institutions placed under administration is based on the specific work done to by the department. So that is purely just on the NISFAS, the financial aid bureaus in universities, and how they manage and monitor the loans from their side. So it's got nothing to do with the current state of administration at any university.
Now,
can I clarify, sir?
Yes.
Can I clarify? There have been a lot of complaints and inefficiencies in the administering of NSFAS at university levels. Of course, differing on the strength and the capacity of universities. Now, NSFAS, with a view of coming up with a new regime that would tighten up one, efficiencies in administering NSFAS, as well as improving security mechanisms that would ensure that fraudulent activities are able to be picked up and addressed or detected, so that when they are responding and building a new system, they're not just doing it out of a vacuum. They must have a fair understanding of what is taking place and build on the recommendations that would be put forward to them. So that's what has actually happened. That audit served that purpose in the main. Look, in the system, these are the kind of risks. This is what is happening. These are areas of weaknesses. This is what we think you should be doing to close up and to strengthen the system. Done by NSFAS. So we intervene and put an institution under administration if in that institution, in its entirety, there are financial irregularities that are taking place. So we send an assessor. The assessor assesses as to whether there is any substance on the allegations or the concerns that may be there. Then if there are basis for such concerns and allegations, we come in with an administrator, of which the administrator, among other things, would have to conduct thorough investigations to establish the veracity and extent of those allegations and come up with a turnaround strategy of the institution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All members, I think that we have come to the end of the conversation. Though, maybe in future we should approach it differently. We should know upfront who is sitting around. Because I'm very worried about the about skill development people just
same thing, you know, where our attention, because there are challenges there, you know, that have you known upfront, I'm sure. It's fine. It's fine. I don't know, TG, we are kind of winding down now or closing. Do you want to just have some parting shots?
No, Chair, I would like really to thank you on your capacity as the Chair of this meeting, as well as the honored members of the committee, for the insightful engagement and the suggestions that has empowered us, and all the areas that require further processing, we are going to work on them, and you will find us next time being the better officials than you see today, and we will disclose upfront the presence of National Skills Fund to the committee. And thank the colleagues, you know, for the work, as well as NEFAS. We are looking forward for more allocation so that we are able to address our challenges. That's the humble request we are putting to the committee to assist.
Thank you very much, DG, and the team. And like we said at the beginning, you know, we... with regard to your last comments, we wondered where this meeting last year during the NPPPS. I guess that the portfolio committee in their report of the DRR's BRRR budget review report and recommendation, they might have come up with that. We didn't have a look at it, but to us, that time is the opportunity for departments, for everyone, for us to engage with the department, to engage with National Treasury on the possibilities of maybe there could be funding, further funding or what. But I guess that there will still be opportunity going forward to understand some of the vertical issues, and maybe to maybe with our colleagues, or we should have indicated upfront that when we have meetings with departments, we normally invite the relevant vertical portfolio committees, and the portfolio committee for higher education is on an oversight thing somewhere in the Western Cape. So yes, so they are not able to come because we normally value their inputs. I think that the issues that we really would want to engage with you and with them. We hear this your funding model in terms of your established universities and what they offer and what is not offered at the at your underdeveloped, what you call or small universities, let's say. But the issue really to us is if something's not done, it's left there. Nobody will be called by the department, by us as government. No one else will pay attention to that. And I'm sure you experience that the kids who will go to those universities are really those who are forced to go to those universities. Those students whose parents can afford their UCT and the others, they would want their universities, their kids to come here. We hear that you say no. Okay. But we hear what you're saying, that the Council for Higher Education does moderate the water credit, the cost is being offered. Honorable Swara says he doesn't believe that very much, but it is a perception out there. And sometimes perception is like effect, you know that it becomes a fact, but now I don't want my kid to go there. My kid must go this side, you know. So it's something that, that's why we're saying that to us, I think that this gap of funding between those established universities and smaller universities is something that needs to be, I'm sure you find a way of saying to the smaller ones, how do you ensure that you up your game, but also including offering what is believed not to be is done elsewhere, so that we can ensure that the farm, what you call it, I mean, better commerce transformation that is taking place. You know, I think kind of worried about that. That's one. Two, the issue of normalization of the resources for FET colleges, I think that it needs to be kind of fast-tracked. We hear that you think that it is all the, what you call the resources, funds will be transferred now to the HET from 1560. I don't understand why is it taking this long. You know, I mean, it's difficult to what you call it, to comprehend why is it taking this long. At least one of them said that this is the end of the term of this administration. Maybe when you go to 2014-15, things should have been normalized. Honorable Ramachandran is correct to say we raised the matter with basic education when they were here. You know, other people, they take the hospital approach. If you're not here, say, no, it's not us. It's, we're not responsible for that. It's other people. Now, but we want us to make things easy for yourself. That FET, everything is administered where it is, because it is supposed to be. Whereas funding or what, you don't have a CFO, some part of funding coming from the DHET, the other one is residing elsewhere. You don't want that. For purposes of accountability, there must be one source, so that everyone understands that. What we perhaps maybe we did not have time to engage on our members, but it is worried me a little bit, DG and Mr. Duck. It's what Mr. Duck was saying, that no. Now, they intend funding the students directly. Well, as this committee is not dealing with this issue every day, we might not have an understanding of why you're moving that direction, but it's kind of worrying. For instance, members raising a number of issues about each student. One issue is that you call them professional students. Whether as NSAS will be able to monitor that, which in my naive understanding, think that maybe the university is a better place to do that. One, all those issues of, for instance, the issue that we raised about which you say you told us that you are paying attention, that is whether if this student says, no, my father can be member of parliament, but I stay with my grandmother elsewhere, and so I don't benefit. But in reality, these things do happen.
in reality, not just what you call it, but other people, they will take what you call, they will hide behind that, where it is not necessarily true, or what, but in reality, those things do happen, you know. I know fathers, speaking as a father now, I know fathers, they sometimes take a left turn, you know, and then dodge their responsibilities. No, fathers must not worry, we're not going to ask whether each one of us is not doing that, we're not going to ask. But, I mean, there are difficult, what you call, issues to deal with. But we're not what you call informed by that. Now, this is, I think that we are grateful. But to us, the last thing that I would want to raise is, we appreciate the indicated at the beginning, the minister, what you call intervention about the billion. Though the students are saying the cap is not 1 billion, it's 2.6 billion. But that the making available that billion, it makes a huge difference. It makes a huge difference. Hoping that as the year was kind of progresses, a way of funding will be found to address this. On that note, sorry that you made you were rushing to go into Pretoria for other commitments. Sorry to have taken a little bit of time.